Beat to quarters. Run out the guns. Stand by the starboard battery.
One broadside into it, if you please, Captain Bush.
Pointers on target. Linstocks ready.
Aye, aye, sir. Ready.
Fire!
Presenting Michael Redgrave as C.S. Forrester's Indomitable Man of the Sea, Horatio Hornblower.
Animal. Even now, when I've finally retired and have nothing to do but relive my past in memory, I sometimes long for the physical activity which I know can be mine no more. But in those days, I was still vigorous and had been too long on land. The endless round of social activities had palled, and I was beginning to yearn for the pitch of a ship under me and the sting of the channel wind on my face. I was bored as I sat in Westminster Abbey, dressed in crimson and white and laden with regalia, listening to a dull sermon, while around me the beautiful building blazed with the colors and arms of fellow knights and nobles. I sat in a stupor of boredom, which was suddenly broken into by a whispering naval lieutenant who appeared at my elbow.
Compliments of Lord Vinton, sir. His lordship would like a word with you immediately.
Oh, sir, with me? I will tell his lordship that I will come this instant. You desire to see me, my lord?
Hornblower. Ready for immediate active service now, Hornblower.
Why, yes, my lord.
I have to start tonight.
Yes, my lord. on what service?
Suppression of mutiny. It's like 94 over again. Did you ever know Chadwick? Lieutenant Augustine Chadwick?
Yes, he was a midshipman with me under Pellew.
Well, he's a... here's my coach at last. I'll drive you to the Admiralty and give you your orders. Now, jump in, Hornblower.
Thank you, sir.
Chadwick had the 18-gun brig Flame. The crew's mutinied in the Bay of the Seine and are holding him and the other officers hostage. They turned a master's mate and four loyal hands adrift in a gig with an ultimatum addressed to the Admiralty.
Uh-huh.
The gig made Bembridge last night, and here's the papers they brought.
What's the ultimatum, my lord?
They want an amnesty, blast him. We're to hang Chadwick and forgive the loss of him, or they'll hand the brig over to the French.
The crazy fools.
Yeah, mind you, it's possible they had some cause. Chadwick's in his 50s and still only a lieutenant. He was always bad-tempered, and lack of promotion made him worse.
The coach drew into the Admiralty Yard, and I followed the First Lord to his room.
I give you a free hand, and you can set about it any way you like. I can spare you three ships of the line if you want them, a couple of frigates, bomb vessels, there's even a rocket vessel if you think you could use it.
Yes, it doesn't seem the sort of situation where sheer force would be of much use, my lord. Will you... give me full powers, to negotiate, for instance.
No, damn it, I will not negotiate. Well, I know what you're up against. Those insolent swine can slip into the mouth of the Seine and give themselves up at the first sign of danger.
Yes, well, if they do that, Bonaparte will have his finest propaganda story in 20 years.
Yes, I know, yeah, I know. It's brains that are needed here. That's why I sent for you. Besides, the seamen like you, Hornblower. They follow you and listen to you.
But if you want me to talk to them, it implies that I'm negotiating, Lord.
No negotiations. We've had enough of that in 94.
Well, then, the carte blanche you gave me is no more than the usual naval officer's orders, my lord. Forgive me if I point out my position, sir, but this is a difficult task. Failure endangers the country and makes me the laughingstock of the Navy. Success brings no honor, for it must remain secret. I submit, sir, that the least I should have is full powers to do whatever seems best on the spot.
All right, you shall have your powers. I'll draw up the orders to that effect. You'll hold your appointment as Commodore, of course.
Getting out into the channel. Mr. Carlo, have all hands shorten sail. Get that main topmast staysail in. Another reef in the topsail. What about, sir? How is this out?
It's a long time since I sailed in so small a vessel as the Port Hurt Chaley, Mr. Freeman. I find the dimensions below deck a bit cramped.
Ah, but she's a lovely fighting machine all the same, sir. Their guns will smash anything of her own size. We carry provisions enough to stay at sea indefinitely, and she'll stand any weather that comes.
Yes, but to do all that with 190 tons means the crew has to be content with conditions that would be, well, hard on cattle.
Oh, they're used to it. Any orders when we sight the flames, sir?
We'll deal with the situation when it arises, Mr. Freeman. My orders give me power to negotiate, but I feel that negotiation would be a sign of weakness. Somehow or other, I shall have to trick 100 English seamen into my power so that they can be hanged or flogged for something. I might feel like doing myself under similar circumstances.
I don't envy you your job, sir. Anything wrong, sir? You look a bit...
Going below. Just call me if necessary.
Better now, sir. Like old days, being at sea again, sir. You always was seasick at the start of a trip, sir.
Confound your insolence, Brown. I am not sick. Merely tired.
Yes, of course you're tired, sir. This bucking and plunging not to tire anyone. When you go on deck again, sir, the leadership asked me to see that you wore this silk scarf she made for you. It's very light and warm as a toaster.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll leave it there.
Aye, sir.
That gale was interminable. Night and day it raged, and though Freeman clawed into it as much as he dared, I knew that it was gradually drifting us away from the course we needed to make to find the mutineers. In the meantime, I fought my squeamish stomach, learned my way about the ship, and tried to pretend to myself that I should know how to handle mutineers when the time came. Freeman was a good captain. His vessel was well kept, and his crew as happy as any crew could be in such weather and circumstances.
The whole crew's been buzzing with pleasure, Sir Horatio, since you recognized that seaman yesterday. It's not often they see a commodore shake hands with an ordinary seaman.
He taught me a lot of good work, Mr. Freeman.
You will really tell the men why you're here, will you, sir?
Afraid I'll have to. We may have to fight, and I can't ask Englishmen to kill Englishmen without some explanation. The watch is changing now. This will be as good a time as any. You'll have the goodness to summon them aft, will you?
Yeah, very well, sir, Horatio. Mr. Carlo!
Aye, sir.
All hands muster off!
Aye, aye, sir. you're wondering what has sent me to sea with you.
All right,
I'll tell you. There is villainy afloat. British seamen have disgraced themselves. They've mutinied in the very presence of the enemy.
My God, he's running a risk. Fancy saying the word mutiny to a gang like this.
We're off the French coast, too, and they know that Bonaparte will heap wealth and luxury on any crew who brings in a British ship.
Now, listen, man. The crew of our own sister ship, the Flame, has done this contemptible thing. Now they're sheltering here in this very bay of the Seine. Every man's hand is against them. The French have no use for mutineers, and it's our mission to dig these rats from their holes. They betrayed England, remember. Forgotten their duty to king and country. The villains who have led them astray must pay the price of their villainy. If they're mad enough to offer fight, then we must fight them. If they surrender without bloodshed, that will be remembered in their favor at their trial. I want no bloodshed. But if that's what they want, they shall have it.
Good old boy!
Clever that was. Never gave him a clue that he thought they might follow the Flame's example. They're happy enough and flattered at being told.
Well, that will do, man. About your work now, and remember, I shall expect unquestioning obedience.
Into the Seine.
She must have slipped past the blockade in the gale. Probably full of grain and sugar. One cargo into the Seine like that is worth more to Bonaparte than a dozen delivered to some inlet on the Biscay coast.
Blast, she's too well in. There'd be no catching her before she reached Harbour Grass.
We'll have to let her go, Mr. Friedman. It's a pity. If it wasn't for the Flame, we might have taken her. That would have meant at least £10 a man prize money.
Yes, Friedman, that won't make the men any better disposed towards the mutineers.
The Flame standing steadily in, sir. She's obviously not going to let us get nearer. She'll give herself up to the French if we do. A pity we can't get to windward of her. Well, there's no room to do it before she gets away.
No. Please have a boat hoisted out for me. I'll have to go and parley with the villains.
Aye, aye, sir.
She don't mean to be taken by surprise, sir. Her guns are out and her balding knitting's rigged. Guns, man, look out for loft, warrant out to the raft, sir. Full trim and proper like this.
Sir, with eyes of my own brand, spare you, sir.
Shall I tell him, sir?
Yes, go on.
Commodore, Sir Horatio Warmbler, KB.
Come alongside. We'll all come on your Hornblower on board, but no one else. And we got Comstock ready to drop into you if you play any tricks.
Lay along, sir, Brown.
Aye, sir.
I'll go up to the main chains.
Kindly tell your boat to sheer off, Commodore. We're taking no risks.
Steer up, Ron. Stand off and on.
Aye, sir.
And now may I ask your business here, Commodore?
I wish to speak to the leader of the mutineers.
I'm the captain of this ship. You can address yourself to me. Nathaniel Sweet, sir.
I'll address myself to you as far as I desire, unless you are also the leader of the mutineers.
In that case, you can call back your boat and leave us, sir.
An impasse already. I studied the white-haired, wrinkled old man with the telescope under his arm who called himself Nathaniel Sweet. The only thing at all unusual about his appearance was a pistol stuck in his belt.
England has sent you here to string me on the gallows anyway.
No, I'm here to recall you to your duty.
Letting bygones be bygones.
You have to stand a fair trial, you and your confederates.
That means the gallows. And I'd be lucky compared with some of the others.
You shall have a fair and honest trial. Every mitigating circumstance taken into consideration.
The only trial I'd attend would be to bear witness against Chadwick. The fellow he killed James Jones, a ship's boy, and reported that he died of fever. Aye, and a few other things, too. Our terms are full pardon for us and a fair trial for Chunwick.
You're being very foolish. You're throwing away your last chance. Surrender now with Mr. Chadwick unbound and the ship in good order, and that will weigh heavily in your favor. Refuse, and what can you look for? Death. That's all death. Nothing can save you from your country's vengeance.
Nothing? Begging your pardon, but Boney can.
You trust Bonaparte's word? Sure. He'd like to have this ship, no doubt, but you and your gang, he won't encourage mutiny. His power rests too much on his own army. He'll hand you back to be made an example of.
Will he now? Look at these letters. Three of them. No, no, I'll keep hold of them, thank you. This is from the military governor of Harbor Grace. And that only promises her the welcome. This is from the prefect of the Department of the Interior, saying it promises us provisions and water if we need them. And this is a letter from Paris sent down to us by post. It promises us immunity from arrest, civil rights in France, and a pension for every man from the age of 60. And do you know who it's signed by? Marie-Louise, Empress, Queen, and Regent. Boney won't go back on his wife's word.
You mean to tell me, ma'am, that you've been in communication with us all?
Aye, we have. And if you had the prospect before you of being flogged round the fleet, you'll do the same.
To win them over, and I can see no possibility of them abating their terms. Either I grant them a free pardon, or I drive them into the hands of Bonaparte. I fear... set the whole Seine estuary in an uproar.
Yes, but there doesn't seem much hope of getting hold of the flame.
I don't know, Mr. Freeman. It might be done. Will you pass the word for the sailmaker to come here? And I shall want his mates and every hand who can use a needle and palm.
Yes, but what... Aye, aye, sir.
Sailmaker and his mates, Mr. Carlo. Hurry, please.
Aye, aye, sir.
Look at the flame, Mr. Freeman. You said yourself that she's an exact replica of the Porta Celia. But there's one difference which I think could be remedied.
I confess, sir, I don't understand. But... Now, here's Swenson, the sailmaker.
Oh, come here, Swenson. You take my glass and carefully study that patched foretopsail on the flame. Can you see it?
I see.
Well, then mark it well. I want this ship to have a foretopsail just like that, so that no eye can distinguish any difference between the two. Can that be done?
Aye, sir, I can do that.
Well, might I ask what's in your mind, Sir Horatio?
You may, Mr. Freeman. What I propose is this. Flame and Porter Taylor are as like as two peas, as you said yourself, and they'd be liker yet when we bend that foretopsail. The mutineers have been in communication with the shore, and they have a promise of immunity if they go in.
But we don't want them to go in, sir.
No, and she won't. Sweet won't give himself up to the French unless he's driven to it. So we won't drive him. We'll sail into the mist. But we'll go in, Mr. Freeman. And they'll think we are the Flame, don't you see? We'll sail in as safely as though we were going into Portsmouth Harbor.
My heavens, sir, it's brilliant.
Horatio Hornblower, starring Michael Redgrave, is based on the novels by C.S. Forrester. Music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers.